Welcome to the Banking Life Podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery, and I'm pretty excited about this unique episode, and it's unique. Let me give you the background. My friend, Ashley Womble, the watchmaker out of Georgia, came on as a guest in episode 261, Building Wealth with a Watchmaker's Precision. We had a lovely conversation, went maybe 45 minutes or 50, somewhere around there. And I'm just telling you, it was a lovely conversation. And I would encourage you to go listen to that if you wish. Okay. Well, when we finished the guest episode part, we continued a conversation, and it was really about his, since he's a client, it was about his particular financial dealings and the infinite banking concept. So I asked Justin and Connor, the AV ninjas, to stop recording while we discussed his private matters. And after we discussed that for about 30 minutes or so, Ashley and I continued talking, right? And it was a lovely conversation. And to the point where, when I got up after the whole session, you know, I made a statement. I wish that would have been recorded, because that was pure gold. And I believe it's pure gold because it's real and it's informative. And then I was made aware that we have a secondary audio recording as a backup for technical issues, right? And so they salvaged this audio recording. Not his private stuff, that's deleted, but the conversation after his private details, right? And that's what this episode is. All right, so that's kind of the background. And now I want you to be aware that, you know, Ashley, salt of the earth man, no question, Southern gentleman, but he attended a client-only event a couple of years ago. And during a break, during the break, I was talking to, you know, individuals and clients and friends, and he came up and asked a question. James, do you know the significance of the cover of Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, the fifth edition, with the safe dial on there? And I thought about it, you know, practicing the infinite banking concept at that time, 18, 19 years, and I couldn't come up with anything that, you know, stood out that was overly significant, right? And neither could the gentleman that I was conversing with. And he said, well, the safe dial on the cover of Becoming Your Own Banker, fifth edition, is stopped on the number 81. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. It's almost like the FedEx emblem on the FedEx logo. You know, you never see the arrow until you see the arrow. And then once you see the arrow, you can never unsee it. You know, we see things and don't necessarily see things entirely. And then when you see them entirely, you can never unsee. It's like seeing something that you've never seen before. But then once you see it, you can never unsee it. Right, which is exactly, you know, the infinite banking concept. And so I thought that was pretty lovely. And then, you know, discussion since then is, you know, the detail of a watchmaker is probably the reason he noticed that. You know, in 18, 19 years, no one has ever, to my knowledge, you know, they've never pointed it out to me, whether they've seen it or not. And so what is the significance of 81? And my encouragement would be go back to Becoming Your Own Banker, the book, and read how it all got started, right? What happened in Nelson's life in 1981? Okay. And then for all you financial gangsters out there, right, if you don't have a client or a friend who's written a song for you and your organization or a ditty, you know, maybe you should try harder. I don't know. And I'm saying that because Ashley is also a musician and has written a ditty for us, which we greatly appreciate. Okay, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy.
Good morning from Georgia to my good friends in Texas. I thought I'd share something with you this morning, and it's a result of listening to a Banking with Life podcast yesterday in my office. And of course the jingle comes on, it's catchy little tune and everybody seems to like it. So I said to myself, that needs lyrics. So I took the liberty to write some, and I thought I would run it by you. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you like it. So go something like this right here. I'm going to do it in D. There's a little old town in Texas they call Alvarado. That's where the Nethery clan can show you a plan to make your money grow. You'll learn about a man named Nash and how to bank your cash. It's called the IBC. It's good for you and me and the family. Try it, I know you will see. If you're tired of the way you've been banking your pay, you can change it. Just call the Netheries about the IBC and they'll arrange it.
The question is, how much do you need? So,
right. Well, and two, let me say that on a couple of things there, there's, you don't have the flexibility without term riders, and you don't have the flexibility in those HEC Bs.
Okay.
So you're paying 50 grand and you don't have the ability to go up and down. Right. If, I don't know that they don't, but I don't think they do. I'm pretty sure they don't. But if you were even able to put a term rider on there, they use blended PUA and term. The rider is blended. And, you know, it's just, I agree they look good. Functionally, there's got to be the perfect place for it, in my opinion, because you know, and even part of, you know, what we're talking about, looking at death benefit, cash values and premiums, you know, we also have to keep into the equation that what the activity that you're doing is going to produce income, right? So how much outstanding in loans do you want to have at these future times when you're moving into passive income that you're going and creating?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying that's just another part. And I know I'm going back in the conversation, but that's another component: total death benefit, total premium, the cash flows, and what you're actually financing, and passive income, right? You know, how much in outstanding loans do you want when you get there?
Questions.
Slip my mind.
You know, most people rely on their traditional investments like a 401 or an IRA for their passive income comfort. And I get that, but that's why I did real estate, because it keeps paying. And this midterm is so exponentially stronger on return. That's what we're going to rely on to pay whatever policy loans that we have, and to keep, you know, funding the PUAs. And, you know, at some point, you're not going to be able to put more in your policies because you either are at the back line, or you're after your 7-year pay and you're, you know, limited then to what you can put in. But it becomes academic because, here again, how much do you need? And by the time I'm 71, 72, still healthy, we're set. We're set. And it has all those attributes. Like I said, your money is safe from attack. It's like it's in a trust. You pay simple, but you earn compound. There's no volatility in it. So you don't have to worry about the market. It pays the dividend. Everything's tax-free unless you mech it. There's just nothing like it out there, and it's such a liberator. It really is. It's a real tonic. And like I said, thankfully, oh, by the way, have you ever gotten on FDIC.gov and looked at all that money that banks, the top 4 or 5 banks, put into BOLI?
Yes, many times over the years. Many
it's
times.
It's incredible. They don't want
hundreds and no hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's why they have so many vice presidents in each of these branches.
You know, and if I talk too in depth or long about AUL, mm-hmm. because that really opened my eyes. I mean, I was a young man, and I just thought everybody should be active financially. Mm-hmm. Right. And they had a great argument, buy term and invest the difference, and whole life was the enemy. And I mean, I still have these little booklets and books and then different chapters of different books that we would use, you know, trying to get people to agree to see what we're seeing. But, you know, A.L. Williams, and he's still with us. I understand he's drinking Mai Tais off the Florida Keys somewhere. I don't know. He sold that, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it became Prime America, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And then, you know who owns Prime America?
I do not.
Citibank.
Hmm.
So while you're looking at the numbers of BOLI within these banks, Citibank, Citigroup, Citibank, they own hundreds of millions of dollars in BOLI, but they're telling their clients to buy term through Prime America.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fact.
Now, there is a financial entertainer that you and I both know. By the way, mm-hmm. I love that Halloween deal y'all did. Love that.
Thank you.
He does not understand the infinite banking concept. He understands how traditional whole life works. And it's amazing to me, someone hasn't gotten to him to explain why he's wrong about the generalities of the IBC concept. He applies what he knows about whole life to the listener or call in to disparage it. And unfortunately, he garners a lot of respect in his fold. And so when millions of people are listening to him talk about negatively, talk about IBC, it's not good. So there's nothing you can do about that. But my point in that is it's amazing that no one has sat him down and shown him how really IBC works. Because it's been some time, 4 or 5 years since that's been going on with him.
Actually, I think this is another example of you, sir, being full of grace. All right. I think that if Dave Ramsey would care to look, he would. I think he knows.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know that, but I don't know how he couldn't know. Right? If he doesn't know, it's because his arrogance, he's got the arrival syndrome. Mm-hmm. That would be the only way that he couldn't know. And I agree, he's about as arrogant of a man as I've ever listened to in my life. He's arrogant, right? I guess I'm arrogant, and I can recognize that in him. I think he knows. And so, and that's just a thought that I have, and I've had for several years now. You can't be that kind of financial entertainer and talk about all this stuff without knowing. It's just like you working on the Rolexes. You know a Rolex. I bet you could rebuild 5 of them in your sleep. All right. What's the cheapest watch on the market right now that tries to compete with Rolex?
Let me say this. Probably Seiko.
Okay, thank you. You didn't spend 5 seconds. You know both sides. My point is this. You know that business inside and out.
Yes, sir.
I think you do, too. And Dave Ramsey's got to know the other side.
Okay.
All right. And I'm just saying, this is my thoughts, and And I've thought about, you know, I've done a Dave Ramsey quasi rebuttal. I think he knows, and I think you're being graceful, and I think it then becomes a character issue.
Well, there's three things. Number one, you are definitely not an arrogant person. You're salt of the earth and very intelligent. And so I really appreciate how you communicate and get what's on your mind to people. And you got to think, James, the fallout of all the people that you help and convey the tenets of IBC to, they're telling their family members who believes in them and trusts them. Mm-hmm. So it keeps going and going and going. And you're to be commended on that, really are. And I love the idea, the fact rather, that you are the first student in the Nelson Nash Institute. And you had that relationship with Nelson. Yeah, you know, this stuff is back of the hand knowledge to you. And so to implement it like you do, you really are to be commended. Now, the other two points about Dave, you have to remember he stands to profit greatly by telling people to buy term when he owns the company that's selling the term. Number three, he tells his constituents and his potential customers, go out there and get yourself a mutual fund and earn that 12, 13, 14%. I don't know anybody that's earning that. If they are, I don't know them. And I know a lot of guys that do that, IRAs. So that to me is disingenuous. If he's touting that kind of return, and on top of that, you got to pay tax if you earn anything on an IRA, unless it's a Roth. That and being disingenuous about the IBC thing, he's protecting himself, and he is an entertainer.
He is.
Susie.
Same thing. I would add to that a fourth point. If he honestly looked at the infinite banking concept, all right, and truly vetted it and could see, at his level of financial education, the entertainer and promoter, he should be able to mathematically, intellectually catch this. Mm-hmm. Right? If he did, the last 30 years of his work would be turned on its head, because then he would have no enemy to shred, and it would go against everything he said for 30 years.
Lose his credibility.
He can't afford to. Yeah. Not only, yes, he owns the prime, or he owns the term company, mm-hmm. but he charges his ELPs.
Yeah.
I don't remember what. Yeah. Have you just go ask any realtor, any Ed Jones or any investment guy. Mm-hmm. Now he's really recruiting for the property and casualty insurance agent. Yeah. He charges them anywhere from $500 to $5,000 a month to be an ELP.
Wow.
And I think the average is somewhere around $1,000 to $1,500 a month.
Gosh. I hope it's a good book to pay him that and make profit. Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So he has a vested interest in not discovering the truth if he hasn't already discovered it. Mm-hmm. How can you tell somebody that they're going to expect they can receive, enjoy the, you know, go earn 12%. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, he hadn't done it through the stock market.
Mm-mm. No
right.
Way.
And do you think Wall Street loves him and Susie Orman? They mm-hmm. love him.
Yeah. He's an advocate. He's an advocate. Yep. And once you peel back the layers and see the true content, it's very disheartening. And yes, he's helped people, but it's hard-nosed, hardcore protocol. You know, eat beans and rice and then rice and beans, pay your credit cards off, and don't go back to doing what you did that got you into trouble. He never talks about getting out of the hole and living comfortably. All he ever talks about is put your money in a IRA.
Yeah, get out of debt. I agree that you should get out of debt. What method do you want to use? It starts with discipline, right? Mm-hmm. Spending less than you make. I don't know, saying no. If you got to put your credit cards in a bucket of ice, okay. You know, I tell you, I don't know if I've talked about it on a podcast or not. And if I hadn't, I should have already. I had a guy several years ago, 7-8 years ago, he called and, you know, had a conversation. And he's a pastor and he's like, James. And we had a couple of calls. You know, he sent all of his financials. We were going down the path of him becoming your own banker. Mm-hmm. And he was a home builder. And Dave Ramsey, a student his whole life, or, you know, 20, 25 years, he delivered the program, I don't know, Peace University or whatever, the program that Dave sells in the churches. Mm-hmm. And then they get a church member to present and hold the shops. You know, he did that in his church. Man, I can't believe I can't recall that. Anyway, he raised his children, which they were young adults at that time, you know, mm-hmm. in their early 20s, I think married. Peace University. I'm gonna Google this, because I just can't stand not recalling it. Anyway, this guy calls me. You know, he's like, read Nelson's book, can't believe it. It's the exact opposite of everything that he's done, and he's been the program director in his church. Hold on, I'm gonna get this.
Okay.
If I can get it without.
This guy got a church there in Texas?
Yeah, well, he was just a member of the church, right? He's just okay. A member of the church. I don't remember what it is, Financial Peace University, whatever program Dave sells in the churches, right? Well, they have to have a facilitator in the church or the organization to teach these classes, mm-hmm. Dave Ramsey's classes. This guy did that for years and years in his church, raised his children to be strictly Dave Ramsey, right? Mm-hmm. He reads Nelson's book, can't believe it. He calls me, we have several phone calls, and he said he was in the home building business and in the development, right? He had big Caterpillars, heavy equipment, and all this kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. Goes broke in 2008 and 2009. Mm-hmm. All right, when the correction came. Yeah. And Financial Peace University, that's what it is, Financial Peace. Okay. And we're going through this, and you know, we're figuring out his cash flows, and he's still in the rebuilding phase 6 or 7 years later from 08.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Following Dave Ramsey for the previous 20 years, teaching it for the previous 15 to 20 years in his church, leading his family down that way, all hook, line, and sinker. Only had term that was on its way out, right? Yeah. It was going to end, right? Okay. Well, he goes broke, and he goes to his banker. And for a loan, because he's trying to rebuild. He wants to get back into the real estate development business. And he wants to implement the infinite banking concept at the same time. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's just trying to rebuild and didn't have capital. And his banker tells him, he said, yeah, we'll loan you the money on your equipment. And you got to sell half of your equipment, and we'll loan you the money on the other half of the equipment. Right.
Yeah.
And then when he gets down, this is all going on right before, you know, he's talking with me. And then we get right down to implementing the policy, and he just couldn't do it. He just couldn't do it because it'd gone against everything that he'd preached for 20 something years.
Gosh, you talk about ingrained. That's institutionalized thinking right
yep.
there. That's,
yep.
That's too bad.
And he didn't even, you know, he didn't even think through that. I said, I don't remember his name. I'm like, the banker is telling you what you have to do to get access to the capital that you need to do the business. That's your God-given abilities and talents, is this real estate development. That's all he's ever done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's good at it, but the numbers got away from him, and he didn't have the resources to stay out of trouble. A lot of people in the construction-related businesses got into that bucket. They just didn't have the resources to stave it off.
Let me tell you about a client that I have. He's about 90 now, okay? Mm-hmm. He was 50 years, and he's been a client for probably 20. I might be rounding up a year or two. Mm-hmm. He was 50 years in the concrete business when we met, all right? And this has been 20 years ago, all right? Two crews, you know, home, little side jobs, you know, driveways, sidewalks, apartment complexes, two crews, and he's right here south of Dallas. He Dallas-Fort Worth was his territory, still is. He's still in business. His son runs his business. Yeah. All right. He became a client humpteen years ago, and when 2008 and 9 came, right, and his competitors were going out of business, right, you know what he did?
Bought them.
He bought all their equipment for 10 cents on the dollar. This man was buying rebar by the truckload. You know, rebar is a commodity, volatile price. He's in the concrete business. He would buy, I mean, I'm talking by the 18-wheel truckload of rebar and stack it on his yard. And he was financing that with his policies. And he financed an awful lot of that equipment purchase from his failed competitors, from his policies that he still has today. And he has so much death benefit, it's not even funny. I mean, so it goes, but he, you know.
And his son has a policy too, probably.
Yeah, his son, he has policies, multiple. His wife has multiple. His wife today got... bless her, is homebound. They have to have home health care for her. But then their clients bought a particular policy that's a combination of long-term care, but it's built on a life insurance chassis. And only one, well, there's a couple of companies that do it. Anyway, that they're paying that benefit. They have policies on all of their children except for the ones that married attorneys. The attorneys just can't wrap their mind around this sometimes. And then all of their grandchildren, humpteen. Yeah. They paid a lot of premium over the years. A lot.
Wow. That that's mind blowing for the gentleman to pay so little for those resources, that equipment and that steel, you know, the rebar. That's like getting your stuff from Goodwill.
You know, and the money that he quote unquote saved on the truckloads of rebar, he told me it got him two or three jobs because he could outbid his competition because he had less money in the raw material because he had purchased it, you know, by the truckload at a discount.
What have I heard you say at least 1,000 times?
I don't know, but I hope it's good.
When you've got the capital, opportunity will find you.
They will. They'll track you down.
Man, that's a
man. I shouldn't have had these guys turn the recording off. I mean, I didn't want to get your personal stuff recorded, but this stuff here is gold. You know.
Yeah, and it works in anyone's life that'll allow it to happen. It's just so powerful. So powerful.
Yeah. So see, we get hung up on life insurance. We get hung up on the internal rate of return and comparing one illustration to another illustration without knowing, you know, and it's hard. The consumer can't know the details behind these policies, the mechanics of the policies, what can be done, what can't be done, you know, and then you have human action. You know, what you do with your policy is going to be different than what I do with my policies, and it's going to affect your policy differently than I'm going to affect my policy. At the end of the day, the banking is eternal. Right. And Nelson used to say that, and I didn't agree with him for a long time. You know, I didn't agree that it was eternal.
It is.
There's it is eternal.
Ways about it. And here's another thing I've heard you say before. What you think is the first occupation is not true, because somebody had to finance that activity. So banking is the first entity. And always.
Isn't that a fact? Have you ever heard that before?
No, not till you said it.
But yeah, it's obvious once you hear it, right? Well, of course.
Here's the other thing. I have heard that banks in general earn somewhere between 400 and 1,300% interest on all their activity.
somebody's just putting a number on there because that ain't right. Let me ask you, look, I'm a bank, and I'm talking about central banks, right? Central banking, right? But it really trickles down to the local bank. If you deposit into, I'm the banker. I own the bank. If you deposit $100,000 into my bank, what is my limitation to leverage?
10 times you can loan out.
No, you go to the Federal Reserve, Fred, the Federal Reserve economic data. There is no reserve requirement today in the United States banking system. Okay? None. Zero.
But zero. If a bank gets $1 million from the Federal Reserve to implement into the marketplace, they can 10 times that legally.
They can 100 times that. I'm telling you, there's no 10% legal reserve requirement.
That's what the rule was. Okay.
Huh. No, that rule moves, and we always have. It was 10% for a long time. Actually, I'm telling you, it's zero. I've got the documents. It's zero. So look, if you put $100,000 in my bank, and there is no reserve requirement. None. But let's just say it's 10 times. So I can lend out $900,000. I'm limiting it to 10, 10 times, right? And I pay you 4% on your 100 grand. What am I charging on the 900?
Oh, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Right.
Depending on the credit worthiness and what they're buying.
Okay. So we're putting, that's fine with me. We can average it out at 10. So we say that's a 10% rate of return. No, it's infinity. The number didn't exist until you put your 100 in. I manufactured the 900 out of thin air. It's infinity. The return is infinity because there was no cost to me.
This is why Nelson stressed those people are actually evil because they're borrowing money, lending money that doesn't exist.
That's evil. And that's why he said, if you look at their ancestry, you'll find that they have canine ancestry. I mean, I know they probably took that out of the 10-hour video. What we have today, actually, is the Babylonian banking system. That's the origins of our banking system, is in Babylon. Tell me what else good came out of Babylon.
Not much. Let's see now. My question before I forget it, when did Austrian economics originate? I know it was in Austria, but.
Well, yeah, the modern face of Austrian economics, those guys came from Austria, Karl Menger and Mises and all that. But I think that was when really it's like the very, very early 1800s, but the basis really goes back to Spanish and De Soto, or not De Soto, but some other economists of their day, right? But like Austrian economics, as we think about it today, I think is about the early 1800s.
Okay. All right. It's so simple. And you know, a lot of cultures use that concept, basically. The Koreans do it. The Indian community does it. They've got their own pool of money. And that's where a lot of the financing comes from for real estate investment and business investment. They don't.
The Mexicans do it today. These illegal aliens that come up here, you go cross the border and they're, you know, in Mexico. They don't have any money. They don't trust the banks. They all pull their money. I forget the terminology, what they call that, but that, they do it every day, all day long. To this day in the United States, you get a family of, you know, 10 or 15. They're not even all related, but they absolutely do it.
Yeah.
They absolutely do banking at the you and me level.
You can't blame them for not trusting third parties.
No.
You can't blame them. I don't blame them. I sure don't. But getting back to your point, which is a very good one and cogent, the indifference from people that get introduced to IBC is because the skepticism immediately infiltrates their thinking because they're hearing the words whole life and they're listening to something that's not traditional. So that's where the challenge or the pushback comes from. You got to break through that barrier because it's generational. Like you've talked about, go get a good education, be a good person, go get a job, save your money, start doing X, Y, and Z. And it's hard to break through that. It really is.
Preach, bro. So, preach. You know, I mean, that's, I guess he that has ears, let him hear. You know, I don't know.
Well, don't take this the wrong way, but insurance industry has a very well-earned reputation that's not a good one.
I agree.
And so you fight that battle every day, but your road is not paved with what they teach and sell.
Nope.
And I'm so glad you know the difference. But see, that's where a lot of your value and power comes from. You've been on that side of the coin, and you know how it works. You've got a clear black and white view of how this whole thing works. And that's where you have an advantage. You know, all these guys that are practitioners now, I've met four or five of them. That's great. But they don't have that background like you do. No. You've lived it. You've sold it.
Well, that's just like you. How? Where am I going to go find a watchmaker that has your experience?
Gosh, James, I like to stay on the positive side of all conversation.
Right.
But the things I can tell you about how the brands treat this business, it would shock you. It's really tough. It's tough. I don't recommend any young person getting into it. I don't. If you want to do it for a hobby, fine. But don't bet your paycheck and your livelihood on it.
I believe you, and I don't want to know how bad it is, you know, because I like to be as positive as I can on all subjects. But actually, I could do the same with you, sir. You know, I've been in a few home offices of these life insurance companies myself. Mm-hmm. Some I represent and some I don't. And if people really knew what was going on financially, they wouldn't buy anything but life insurance and annuities with mutual companies. Mm-hmm. And I firmly believe that. Regardless of what the life insurance company does, doesn't do, doesn't know, like or dislike. I mean, these are contracts.
Yeah. And here again, I'm not disparaging the people that sell those products. That's all they know. They're captured agents. And it does beat doing nothing. But it's just so fat with commissions and fees and costs. And then you're at the mercy of the marketplace. You just don't have control. You cross your fingers and hope when it matures out, you've got a little bit. That's the problem. You know, as nice as I can say it, that poor agent, I don't want to confront him, and I'm not going to do it, but I feel like doing it sometime. He's got what we call a gastrocranial condition.
Yep.
And how can you cure that? I mean, he believes in what he's doing. So you're not going to accomplish anything but back and forth, and I'm not interested in that. It is what it is. We're going to make the most of it and just move on. So that's
well, you know, there's, if I can say it, and I think I can, you know, I don't completely agree with one statement that you've made a couple of times, and I'm going to share with you why.
Okay.
Right. You said, well, it's better than doing nothing, you know, the IRAs, 401ks. And let me say, I'll agree with that to a certain extent, right? But whenever, let's say you started investing your money in the markets through IRAs or whatever in the 90s when it was a boom cycle, right? And then along comes 2000 and it wipes out at least 50%. On average, right? That's better than doing nothing, right?
Yeah.
All right. I'll agree with that. But then you do it again from 2003 to 2008. You got back just to where you almost were in 2000.
Yeah.
All right. So we go through 20 years there, and I guess you're right. I mean, it is better than doing nothing in my example. And I don't want to cherry pick examples, but, you know, whenever you got a guy that's bought term insurance, the investments didn't work out, and he didn't die, you know, that would be better than nothing. He didn't die. He had the coverage. But when he is going to die, he doesn't have any coverage.
Right.
And the investments didn't work out, you know. So I guess I'll retract my statement that I disagree with you. Because I don't disagree with you. It is most of the time better than nothing, you know.
Well,
but
you
there's
know, it. I know a lot of people that have just boatloads of gold, physical gold, just laying around. That's a commodity. It can. It's $3,700 an ounce.
I know. I seen it the other day. It's $3,400.
Lordy. James, I sold about, this has been about a year and a half ago when it was half of that. I think what I sold was about 2 pounds.
Wow.
I had waited. Nobody's got a crystal ball. But
right.
Then that would have been a boon. That would have been real good. That would have been IBC money. But, you know, you've got to be careful with your resources. But you need to work it in the most advantageous way possible. And unfortunately, like we've, you know, touched on more than once today, people think in traditional ways because they don't understand how money works, and they feel comfortable doing it because 99.9% of the people in and around their life are doing it too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like when I'm out front, if I ever leave my office and there are people out front, it's like I'm a bartender because I can strike up a conversation with any of them. And the guys that come in here that happen to be insurance agents for State Farm or whoever, we'll talk about their products. And I'm just listening to them. And they go, yeah, hey, we've got programs. You can borrow money at 2%. Where can you borrow money at 2%? And on and on and on. And they don't know that I know what I know. But that's what they think is real and the best. And they're writing all day long till they get writer's cramp. I'm sure of it.
Yep.
And, you know, that's okay. But when you know the other side of the coin and educate yourself a little bit, I think that's the difference maker. And I was just curious enough when I heard you and Ryan talking that 3 or so years ago in the fall of 22. And then I got interested and got the book. I promise you, I spent those 2 days. We were there for a week, and I spent 2 of those days in there reading that book. Oh, she wasn't happy about that. But
she probably didn't even like me. We hadn't met, but she probably didn't even like me, man, after that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Trust me, I've really talked y'all up, and it would be good for all of us to meet one day. But it was enlightening. It was so good, I couldn't believe it could be true. But, you know, after I implemented it into my life and then got that loan and see how it operated, that's real world. That's real world. And so I can share that with anybody that wants to get involved with it. So, anyway.
I agree. All right, Ashley, I got to go to work, sir.
Me too. It's been a pleasure. It felt like we were talking for 10 minutes. And again, thank you so much for having me, James.
You're welcome. Thank you for taking the time to sit down with me. I appreciate it very much. So,
all right.
There's a little old town in Texas they call Alvarado.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.
It's called the IBC. It's good for you and me and the family. Try it, I know you will see. If you're tired of the way you've been banking your pay, you can change it.